You're listening to Resolution Radio. Radio. ResolutionRDO.com.
Welcome to American Dissident Voices. I'm Kevin Alfred Strom. Today we approach again the ominous anniversary of the USS Liberty murders. The day the Jewish power structures, State of Israel, openly slaughtered our American Navy men. Today they still slaughter our people in only slightly more covert ways. Gather your family, gather your friends, gather your co-workers. Have them listen to this program, download, print, and distribute our truth flyers. Visit natall.com/liberty. That's natall.com/liberty. You may never know what seeds you will sow, what people you will awaken, what tragedies you will prevent. Be more than a spectator. Be a participant in history. In 1997, the 30th anniversary of the Israeli attack on the USS Liberty, there was an effort by patriots to institute a national memorial to the Americans killed and maimed by the Jewish state. But the federal government said no. National Vanguard writer and independent researcher David Sims tells us, quote, "I was personally told that the custom was to recognize a significant event of this kind on the 50th anniversary, not the 30th." Close quote. In the 50th anniversary year of the attack, President Trump made no fewer than 3 major speeches at Holocaust memorial events, and declared the entire month of May to be Jewish American Heritage Month, but made no move to memorialize the Americans aboard the Liberty who were murdered by the Jewish state. Trump kowtowed to Jewish power and money at the so-called Wailing Wall, effectively rewarding the murderers of those American sailors and officers. The Wailing Wall pilgrimage is one that aspiring and sitting national leaders are apparently expected to make by the Jewish power structure. But one notes the curious silence of these leaders, of the media, and of the feminists when confronted with the facts that access to the wall is sexually segregated, and that its very existence is based on Jewish racial supremacism. In 1991, Israeli knowledge that the Liberty was an American vessel was confirmed. Evidence released that year by the U.S. Embassy in Beirut included an intercepted radio conversation of an Israeli pilot who communicated with his base, quote, "It's an American ship," close quote, and his headquarters ordered him to continue the attack. British reporter Anthony Pearson, in his book Conspiracy of Silence, reports that the Jew in command of the 3 Mirage jets that attacked the Liberty was born in Baltimore and served as a fighter pilot in Vietnam. The pilot of the 2nd Israeli plane was also a Vietnam veteran and had served in the U.S. Navy Air Corps. The 3rd pilot was a native Israeli. It is rather disheartening to think that the American armed services had trained two fighter pilots who thought so little of the country of their birth that they joined the Air Force of another country and carried out a murderous air assault on an American ship. But such are the loyalties and nature of Jews. Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Admiral Thomas Maurer, and Secretary of State Dean Rusk stated publicly that Israel deliberately attacked the Liberty. Rusk stated in his memoirs, quote, "I was never satisfied with the Israeli explanation. I didn't believe them then, and I don't believe them to this day. The attack was outrageous." Close quote. Nevertheless, the media downplayed the affair, which, had it been perpetrated by any other country than Israel, would have been a cause célèbre and possible grounds for war. Survivor James Enns Jr., who was on the Liberty that terrible day, recently stated, quote, "The official lid on this story remains almost as tight as the day it was first applied." Close quote. The attack on the Liberty remains the only maritime incident in U.S. history in which U.S. military forces were killed and which was never investigated by the U.S. Congress. The Navy Court of Inquiry, which in effect whitewashed the Israeli attack, was headed by Admiral Isaac Kidd, who just happens to be Jewish. Working under Kidd and aiding in the cover-up was Admiral John S. McCain, the father of the consistent warmonger, Republican presidential candidate, and fanatically pro-Israel senator John McCain. There's now evidence that suggests that the Jews' intentions in the Liberty tragedy were far more malicious, far more murderous, and far more evil than we or even the eyewitnesses to the attack ever imagined. This evidence strongly suggests that Israel and Lyndon Baines Johnson were on the verge of enveloping the world in nuclear warfare, and the mass murder, under utterly false pretenses, of millions of innocents. According to the BBC documentary, Dead in the Water, the incident was a, quote, "daring ploy by Israel to fake an Egyptian attack," close quote, to get America to enter the war against Egypt. The first wave of attacking Israeli planes had been repainted with Egyptian markings. Convinced the attack was coming from Egypt, or playing his part in the false flag, President Lyndon Johnson, according to the documentary, launched nuclear-armed planes targeted on Cairo from a U.S. aircraft carrier. The aircraft were recalled almost too late, only when it became clear that there would be survivors and numerous others well aware that Israel was responsible. These numerous others would, most significantly, be the men of the U.S. 6th Fleet who had heard the Liberty's distress calls and who were on their way to help, and secondarily anyone else, surely including the intelligence services of Russia and other nations, who would potentially have heard the transmissions that got through the Israeli jamming. The Jews had initially been confident that they had fully destroyed the antennas and radio room of the Liberty, thus rendering her incapable of communicating with anyone. And the Jews' subsequent actions clearly prove their intent was to murder everyone aboard, leaving no witnesses to call for help or tell the tale. If the BBC's investigators are right, then, the nuclear attack on Cairo was stopped. only because a radio man aboard the Liberty risked almost certain death to string a wire between the masts of the ship to serve as a long wire antenna, and then managed to fix or rig up one of the vessel's auxiliary transmitters. That radio man's name is Richard Sturman. Another radio man, James Hallman, then transmitted a message that somehow made it to the fleet despite intense jamming from the Israelis. Peter Hoonan writes in Operation Cyanide, quote, "Liberty radio man Richard Sturman concluded that the attackers had carefully prepared for the attack, with the specific intention of preventing the ship communicating with the outside world. To do so effectively, they must have had prior knowledge from shore-based receivers of the five frequencies being used by the ship, so that jamming gear could be tuned to them." Sturman recalled his anger when he discovered that the international distress frequency used for Mayday messages was also jammed, close quote. According to researcher Judy Morris, quote, "The astute crew, however, made a startling discovery. The Israeli jamming capabilities did not work when they were actually engaged in bombing, and the USS Liberty crew had windows of a few seconds of opportunity just before and during strikes to send out a message." Hoonam writes, "At first, the signalmen felt their task was hopeless. Plane after plane was swooping in on the ship, firing cannon, shooting missiles, and dropping napalm. Then someone spotted that there was a respite from the jamming, lasting just a few seconds when the attacking planes fired their missiles. Hallman grabbed the opportunity and shouted into the mic, 'Any station, this is Rockstar. We are under attack by unidentified jet aircraft and require immediate assistance.' On the USS Saratoga, call sign Schematic, the radio man picked up the message, but it was garbled, possibly by further jamming. 'Rockstar, this is Schematic,' he said. 'Say again, you are garbled.' Eventually, the USS Liberty message was acknowledged and authenticated 10 minutes after the attack began. The USS Saratoga confirmed Liberty's message with, 'Roger, Rockstar. Authentication is correct.' The message bounced everywhere and was even acknowledged by two U.S. embassies in the region. Furthermore, it was impossible for the Pentagon not to know of the Liberty's plight, as all messages are also automatically routed to the Pentagon and other government agencies. The Israelis must also have intercepted the radio message. The Liberty crew was relieved and believed that help was on the way. Wrong. Although fleet commanders quickly ordered rescue operations, twice the rescue missions were ordered called back by Secretary of Defense Robert McNamara, a close friend and trusted associate of LBJ. In fact, it's documented that during one of the conversations between the 6th Fleet Commander and McNamara, LBJ, the president, got on the phone and roared, "We will not embarrass an ally," to reinforce McNamara's direct command from Johnson to not rescue the ailing USS Liberty and her crew. According to James Ennis, the entire attack lasted 1 hour and 15 minutes, although some crew members believe it was longer. Unquestionably, the attack was sheer hell for those on board the USS Liberty, and the agony was prolonged by the fact that airborne help from the 6th Fleet never arrived as expected. Then something extraordinary happened. The Israelis stopped attacking, despite having more than enough firepower to finish the job of sinking the USS Liberty and her crew. It's been documented that the Israelis had commando helicopter crews hovering above the USS Liberty with a crew to finish the job. Clearly, the USS Liberty crew expected to die. But with the message out, and everybody knowing about it, including the Russians who knew what was going on because they were close by in their own disguised spy ships as they intercepted the message, or possibly even observed the USS Liberty being attacked, the Israelis panicked, called off the attack, and never finished the job. Close quote. If Richard Sturman, may his name always be remembered by our people, had not had the courage to climb the upper reaches of the ship under direct enemy fire, all of his fellow crewmen would surely have been killed, and a disastrous nuclear war might have ensued. If James Holman, may his name be engraved forever on our consciousness, and one day be engraved in a stone monument 1,000 feet high, along with Sturman's and the names of the other heroes of the Liberty. If James Holman had not figured out in nearly split-second time countermeasures against the Israeli radio jamming, the blood of every American on board would have stained the sea, and quite possibly the incinerated corpses of millions of people, Russians and Americans included, would have lain lifeless upon the burned earth. When Sturman and Holman awoke on June 8, 1967, they had no idea of the importance their decisions and actions that day would hold, probably for centuries to come. You, today, are in a similar position. Who knows what effect you will have on history when you print and distribute our new USS Liberty Truth Campaign flyer in your community and promote our campaign online. The URL for the flyer is natall.com/liberty. That's natall.com/liberty. Will you bring awareness to a family whose leading position could inspire tens of thousands of others to join us? Will the flyer you hand out fall into the hands of a wealthy man who will spread our message of truth to millions? Will your efforts reach a man or woman who will one day be in a position to make a decision that could prevent yet another war for Israel, possibly even worse than the wars in Syria, Afghanistan, and Iraq, even worse than the Jewish treachery that got us into these never-ending wars, even worse than what the Jews were planning in 1967? Why be a spectator to history? You can be a participant.
You're listening to Resolution Radio, Radio, Radio.
ResolutionRDO.com.
My brothers, my sisters,
I bring you a message of solidarity, a call to action, and a demand for adherence to duty of an Aryan resurgence and ultimately total Aryan victory. We have broken the chains of Jewish thought. We know not the meaning of the word mine, it is ours. Our race, the totality of our people. 10 hearts, 1 beat. 100 hearts, 1 beat. 10,000 hearts, 1 beat. We are born to fight and to die and to continue the flow. The flow of our people. Onward we will go, onward to the stars, high above the mud of yellow, black, and brown. So kinsmen, duty calls. The future is now. If months from now you have not yet fully committed yourself to the alliance, then you have in effect not only betrayed your race, you have betrayed yourself. So stand up like men and drive the enemy into the sea. Stand up like men and swear a sacred oath upon the green graves of our sires that you will reclaim what our forefathers discovered, explored, conquered, settled, built, and died for. Stand up like men and reclaim our soil. Kinsmen, arise. Look towards the stars and proclaim our destiny. Defeat never, victory forever.
We are the American Freedom Party. This is the most urgent time in the history of Western civilization. In the year 1900, white people of European descent comprised 35% of the world population. Today it is less than 9% and falling fast. Europe is being overrun with Middle Eastern immigrants, and America's founding stock is rapidly being replaced with third world peoples from around the globe. For the last 50 years, every influential institution in this nation, our schools and universities, our media, our churches and our employers, have promoted policies and principles that teach whites to be ashamed of their great heritage and birthright. We, who in the 1950s, the 1960s, and 1970s were the world's dominant force, are now so afraid of being called racist that we were quailing towards irrelevance and extinction. Join the American Freedom Party today. Reach us at theamericanfreedomparty.us or call us at 701-317-5317. Paid for by the American Freedom Party.
Water is the single most important thing your body needs, so you want to be sure it's the best for you and your family. Since 2005, thousands have depended on Berkey Purified Water. The Berkey guy provides the lowest priced filtration systems in every size. For incredibly delicious water now and in an emergency, get to GoBerkey.com or call 877-886-3653. 877-886-3653. GoBerkey.com.
What would your life be like if you woke up each morning with new vitality, feeling better than you have in years, and you noticed a difference in your sleeping patterns, blood sugar levels, and had a sense of well-being overall? There's something that is changing thousands of people's lives, and you could be one of them. It's called Heart and Body Extract. Sharon Harris, co-creator of Heart and Body Extract, talks about the positive effects of Heart and Body Extract.
What happens with the formula Heart and Body Extract is it's giving the body the necessary vitamins, minerals, amino acids, enzymes, and phytonutrients so the body will heal itself. And yes, the body does have the ability to balance blood pressure, balance cholesterol, clean and unclog the arteries. It can also work on balancing the circulation for diabetics. So the body is an amazing thing. It simply needs some help so it has the tools to heal itself.
Heart and Body Extract gets results. To order your 2-month supply, call now, toll free at 866-295-5305. Order online at hbextract.com.
I believe in race. I'm not ashamed to admit it at all. And that doesn't mean one bit that I'm out to persecute or hurt any man because of his race. He can't help what race he is. We believe that each race has particular geniuses and particular faults. The white race has built white Western civilization, and we think the white race should dominate in that area. National socialism fundamentally is the application of science not only to inanimate objects and animals, but to mankind himself. We believe that the communists, the Marxists, have one fatal error in their doctrine. A place where absolutely there's a hole and there's no explanation for it. They admit evolution. They admit that animals vary by breed and that you can breed better and worse animals. Now, how do they explain how there is a sudden dividing line when you come to one particular animal called man? They have no explanation. Time and again, when I've asked them, they have no explanation. They just say, if it's got two legs and it stands on its hind feet, then it suddenly becomes a special being and there is absolute equality. They're all the same. Man is an animal just like all the rest of the animals. He's more intelligent, but he must obey nature's laws. And that insofar as he is an animal, he must obey the laws that pertain to animals. We say that when the white race has produced such a wonderful thing as Western civilization, we should treasure the people that have produced that and can maintain it. And we should not mix them all up with other kinds of civilizations, whether or not they're good. We should certainly try to preserve it just the way the farmer preserves his better grade of stock. We are also, socially speaking, tribalists. You must live as social beings. You have to live with other people. And this is impossible unless you observe certain fundamental laws of the tribe, the ancient Indian tribe, any kind of tribe of people, even a wolf pack, has got to have certain fundamental things. One of these things is leadership. Not leadership by the most popular, but by the strongest and the best. Any tribe or Indian tribe or any group or family should be led by the best and the strongest. Otherwise, it disintegrates. It's got to have group pride and loyalty. You've got to have selection in the mating process, something that we have almost lost now. We believe that it is of fundamental importance to society that the strongest, cleverest, and the best of the men mate with the best type of women who will make good mothers. And when you destroy that machinery, you get what we have now. We believe that you have got to have an organic society. Now, by an organic society, we mean a society, not a dictatorship, but a society in which the parts of the society cooperate together in different functions and in peace and harmony, just the way your body works. Cancer is the wild, uncontrolled growth of cells at the expense of all the rest of the body, and that's what you have in Washington, D.C. right now. Cancer. We believe in private property and free enterprise. It is impossible, we believe, to have a society in which there is any real work going on unless people can get the reward of their effort. And at the same time, we believe you've got to have social justice. You cannot have people who are exploiting and squeezing little helpless people economically. And this is where I get in trouble with the conservatives, because most of today's conservatives, I've discovered, are reactionaries. They're real anxious to hold on to their money. They don't care how they have to figure it out. They just want those money bags. And they come up with any kind of rationale to keep it. Every national socialist believes in idealism, believes in something that is worth more than his own one single human life. He's willing to die for something. When you're ready to die for something, then you're alive. And until you are ready to die for something, you have no real fanaticism. And just at dinner a little while ago with some of the fellows there, they said, were telling me, well, it's terrible to be a fanatic. Well, did you ever stop and think how this country got here? How all the great inventions ever got there? Any one of you out there that is not a fanatic on something or other, whatever it is you're studying, if you're going to be a doctor, be a fanatical doctor. Otherwise, you'll be nothing. You'll just be an ordinary old chug-chugging guy, and when you die, nobody will notice it. But if you're a fanatic, you'll produce something great. You'll create. Creativity is fanaticism. Every creative genius has had to be a fanatic. Many of them have been burned at the stake. So we are ideological and idealistic fanatics. Just like the communists, by the way. In between the Nazis and the communists is the great mass of non-fanatics. The TV watchers and the comic book readers. I will say this. National socialism is the inevitable end product, logically, of evolution. If you believe in evolution, you've got to be a Nazi if you think about it long enough. You can't help it. But what happens is people short-circuit it. The minute they believe in evolution and scientific breeding until they come to that two-legged animal that stands up on its hind legs, then all the rules are up. We say that's not possible. You either believe in the scientific method and the truth, and you apply it to yourself without egotism, or else you don't believe in the scientific method and you're kidding yourself. Nazis believe in ruthless application of the truth, not only to inanimate matter and animals, but to you animals. People, all of us are the same insofar as we are animals and must survive and live as animals. And unless we breed ourselves better, we're going to get worse. That's what's happening. I do worship nature in that I'm humble. When I see the mighty, awesome power of nature, and believe me, I've seen some terrific power of nature, the typhoons off Japan during the war, earthquakes. I've been through some tremendous cataclysms on this earth. And compared to them, the atomic bomb is like a firecracker, nothing. And when you start to think of the enormity of space, our spacemen are just going around at the very bottom levels of space. They're no place yet. There are over 100 million planets where life, just like here, could exist. And in the face of that awesome probability, not possibility, probability, I say it's ridiculous to be egocentric and say we are the center of all things. Everything turns around us. We Nazis are humble. When I look at nature and realize how ignorant and small and feeble and weak and little we are, Nazism is a philosophy of nature, a way of looking at the world. And as I've pointed out, we believe in tribalism. We don't think we're above that. We think that you've got to have pride in your family, pride in your race, pride in your nation. That's not something to laugh at. Patriotism and pride in family and pride in race is something we should be proud of and cultivate, work on, not get rid of. Finally, we believe in morals. We believe in the traditions of goodness, virtue. Now I told you something about what we are, but I'll do as good as I can in telling you what I think our enemies are. And our enemies, make no mistake about it, are the Marxists. The philosophy of Marxism, I believe, is the enemy of all humanity. It's the reverse of humanity. We say communism itself is the most vicious, anti-social doctrine the world has ever known, and here's why. They completely deny the very basis on which any human order can exist at all. Without humans, or at least without civilized humans, you certainly can't have human order. And the communists say they don't believe in race. They believe in absolute equality. The pygmies, the aborigines of Australia, everybody. Let them all come to Carlton, and they'll all write arias and books, and the cannibals will be producing the music and verses. That's all you have to do is educate them. And this simply is not true. This results in chaos, social chaos, which is what we have now. They don't believe in enterprise. They don't believe that people should work for themselves. They believe that the state should come and tell them what to do. They don't believe in private property. They don't believe that you can keep the fruits of your production. They don't have, above all, they have no spiritual ideal. We say the only thing that's worth protecting with your life is ideals and your family, your race, and your nation. And twice in my lifetime, I've been called upon to go out and risk getting killed. And I saw a lot of other young men doing this. Young fanatics that they made out of us, by the way. They made us real fanatic haters of the Germans and fanatic haters of the Japanese. Nobody protested that that was bad to be a fanatic when we were fighting those Japs, and I assure you, we all were. Finally, the communists, if you remember when they first got into Russia, they are against morals. They had free love, no morals at all, everything was have a ball. And the result was they almost tore Russia to pieces, they just fell apart. Now, if you'll notice, they are almost puritanical in Russia. In order to make the thing work, they've had to go back to the very principles of tribalism which we're advocating. You can't work society with a communist pipe dream. Civilization is based on self-sacrifice, on the willingness of men to go out and die for what they believe in. When you get rid of that self-sacrifice, you get anarchy. Civilization is built because I am willing to give up something for my family. And the family is willing to give up something in order to have the town succeed. And the town is willing to give up something so the state can be in business. And the state is willing to give up something so the nation can succeed. Self-sacrifice is the first principle of civilization. Communism has got the fanaticism to destroy you, and it's doing it. And unless you can build up a counter-fanaticism for something you believe in positively, you will be destroyed. You are being destroyed.
Recently, there was a report out that among new babies that were born, this happened last year, minorities were now the majority, that whites were officially the minority.
And they're boasting about it. Khrushchev just said, America's so liberal, they'll never fight. And I think there's a lot of truth to that, but we're going to change that. Won't be quite so liberal after we've had a chance to make America understand what it is and make it conscious of itself and its greatness and its people, and the white race understand that they're worthy of protecting themselves, that they don't have to keep humbling and downgrading themselves while other races are standing up and saying, look at us, how great we are. We keep saying we're ashamed of ourselves for being white. That's a terrible thing. The thing for each race to do is be proud of itself. And the white people and the good people of this country, when they finally realize that they can do that without hurting or being obnoxious to anybody else, they will finally become fanatics to survive, to keep this great country going.